I started with a local piano teacher. I wanted to start playing when I was very young, 4 or 5, I wanted to start. But I started when I was 7 with a local teacher. Then I went from age 9 until I graduated high school to the Manhattan School of Music pre-college, and I studied with Solomon Mikofsky, and he was a really amazing influence on me. After that, I went to Juilliard for a couple of years, and then I dropped out of school to go study in London with Maria Curcio, who was a really remarkable piano teacher. She had been a student of Arthur Schnabel, and I was very fortunate to study with her for 3 years. And then I returned to Juilliard to finish my degree, and I studied with Peter Serkin, who was also a wonderful teacher. And at that point, I felt I'd had enough studying, and that was it. And I'm teaching at Manus, which is a historic conservatory of music in New York City. We have a fabulous piano department, and I only have 3 students there because I travel a lot, so it's big responsibility to teach. I think that you need to be consistent, and but I'm very much enjoying being part of that faculty.
Since your last visit to Cedar Falls, Iowa, you have been traveling all over the world. Tell us about some of the recital halls and venues that you've performed in.
This past summer, I was performing at the Leipzig Bach Festival, and I played an outdoor concert, the German, actually European premiere of Philip Glass's Concerto Number 3 I did there. And that was interesting to be with a city just given over to Bach. I have performed, one of my favorite places I've performed in is the Wigmore Hall in London, which is just a jewel of a hall. I've had a remarkable tour of South Korea playing the Goldberg Variations for enormous halls that were sold out with more than half of the audience under the age of 18. That was really special to see that. So I've performed in very unusual places too, that I've played a concert at a women's prison right outside of Baltimore. That was one of the most memorable concerts I've given. I play a lot in schools. I am very committed to public education, and I like to play in elementary schools. So I often perform in a school. Wherever I may be, I will play in a school.
Now, you have started several school projects. Tell us just briefly about that, the neighborhood classics and backpacking.
Yeah, Bach packing, actually, it's called. Yeah. Bach packing is when I go into classrooms in schools. I like to play for one class at a time, as opposed to in an auditorium. I like it when I can go into the children's space where they feel comfortable and either bring a piano or a digital piano into the room and talk and play about music, how I think it's interesting to listen to music, helping them to discover counterpoint and all sorts of things. So that's something that I just do as my own kind of independent. It's not a formal project, but I just do it whenever I can. And then Neighborhood Classics is a concert series that I started at my local public school where my husband is a teacher. And where I went to school, my mother taught there and my son went there. And so I started this series, which is an evening concert series where I invite other musicians to perform as well. And all of the musicians donate their performances so that the ticket sales benefit the school.
Which is really amazing. That's fantastic.
It's great. The audiences are wonderful because they're children through grandparents, not just from the school community, from the neighborhood. And the concerts are 1 hour long, and I host the concert. So I interview the performers during the concert, and it's great because it makes me feel like I'm making a difference within my own community. And I feel that classical music is, you know, in this country, we're always worried about it being at risk, that we're losing audiences, that young people aren't connecting with it, identifying with it. And it's a big problem to solve. And for me, doing something within my own neighborhood has made me feel like, in my own very small way, I can make a difference and address it without thinking about having to solve the problems of a nation.
One step at a time. Well, you were mentioning that you played the Goldberg Variations just recently in Germany, and Bach's Goldberg Variations really helped jumpstart your career, and you did a very creative thing. Tell us about how you started things out.
I learned the Goldberg Variations back in 2001. I had just won my first competition. Really, my only competition was for a place called Astral Artists in Philadelphia. And it was wonderful because they were going to give me a debut recital. And so I was very excited. I just won that. And then right after finding out that I had won this audition, I also discovered that I was pregnant, which my husband and I were thrilled about, but it seemed like strange timing. And I decided that those two things came together, and I wanted to prepare a program that would be truly meaningful, and I thought the Goldberg Variations would be the piece. I'd always wanted to play them. I never felt ready to play them, and I thought, now I'm going to be a mother. I'm ready to play the Goldberg Variations. And so I then performed that for a few years, and after performing it for a few years, I felt that I really wanted to document it and record it. But I had no record label and I had no management. I was just a freelance musician in New York. And so I raised the money through three friends who had been very encouraging. And I put together the whole recording. I found a fabulous producer, Adam Abeshaus. He's been my producer ever since then. And we recorded it. And then I, like an indie rock band, sent it out to different labels. And about a year after recording it, Telarc picked it up. And they really took a risk with it because I was totally unknown. And everything came together, and it got a lot of press. And the week it came out, it reached number one on the Billboard chart. It's a real fairy tale. I can't explain it, really.
I think it's a combination of you and Bach, probably. And you sort of have an affinity with Bach. You love his music and you enjoy performing it.
Very much so. I think that Bach is my favorite composer, not only to play, but to listen to. And I've actually been doing a really interesting new project with the Goldberg Variations. This past year, I collaborated with a fabulous choreographer called Pam Tanowitz, and she and I created a piece to the Goldberg Variations for piano and seven dancers. I'm on the stage, in the middle of the stage, and they're dancing around me, behind me, under the piano, and we worked on it for a long time. We really did it together, and we're going to be continuing to perform it this year and next year.
It sounds fantastic. I hope you bring it to Iowa because we'd love to see it. So since you did this Goldberg Variations, you've gone on to record eight more albums, which is really impressive too. So how did this all transpire with you and Philip Glass, and how did this all come together?
Well, of course, I've admired Philip Glass since I was a child. And a few years ago, he actually invited me to come over and meet him and have breakfast with him. And it was a real thrill and an honor. And during that conversation, we talked about the possibility of him composing something for me. After that, I thought about it, and I thought it would be so interesting if he would write a concerto for piano and string orchestra, which would be paired with a Bach keyboard concerto. And he really liked that idea. So then I had to figure out, how do I then do this? And it took a little while to figure out, but what eventually came together was a consortium of orchestras who co-commissioned the work. And it's 12 orchestras. And it's a beautiful project because all of the orchestras are smaller orchestras, and individually they would never have been able to afford a commission with Philip Glass. But doing it together, this worked out. So everybody had their own local premiere. So here in Iowa, we're doing the, I guess, Midwest premiere. And it's been very, very special because everyone feels a strong identification with the piece, and all of the orchestras have been very excited to work on it. So it feels very collaborative.
And you were very instrumental in lining up these 12 orchestras as well.
Yes, I really thought about conductors who I enjoyed working with. And the premiere and the recording that we made of it was with a wonderful string orchestra in Boston called A Far Cry. They are a conductorless orchestra. And so that was wonderful to get the experience of working on it for the very first time with them, because they're a group where every member of this 18-piece orchestra has a voice. So it's like playing chamber music with them. Everybody talks. Everybody has an opinion. And it was a very interesting way to discover the music.
And how you arranged this group or this ensemble is how you named your compact disc or your recording as well.
Yes. So when I play with A Far Cry, I have my back to the audience. So the nose of the piano is facing into the orchestra, and the orchestra is forming a semicircle around me so that we can all hear each other and communicate visually with each other. And it creates this kind of interesting bond as well for everybody to be facing each other. And so we decided to call the album Circles for that reason.
And that was sort of the Baroque thing to do anyway, that often these Baroque ensembles, it would either be the first violinist or maybe the keyboard player who is kind of loosely holding everyone together, but you really didn't have a conductor.
Definitely, yes. I mean, I think that you think about people like Mozart later on, he would conduct from the keyboard. And this is something that I'm increasingly doing, and I find it very interesting to have that kind of direct communication with the orchestra. Playing this concerto with a conductor is a different experience that can also be very interesting, because there are certain kinds of subtle things that a conductor can achieve, which is hard to do when you're also playing the piano.
Right.
So it's been lovely. We had our first rehearsal yesterday, and Jason Weinberger was just so sensitive with everything.
Tell us about this work, and what was it like to have a composer say he wanted to write a work for you?
It's always an honor to have a composer say that, but I never expected him to write this piece for me. I had an idea of what I thought it would be, and when he sent me the music, which was handwritten, and I played it, it was like it suited me so much. It's a piece that is all about a very internal world, the colors in it and the rhythm and the subtlety of everything is something that is very much suited to me. And I couldn't believe that he'd written this for me. And I finally was able to tell him that. And I said, it just suits me so much. It's amazing. And he said, well, I wrote it for you. And I thought that that was a beautiful thing for him to say, that he'd really been thinking about how I am as a musician when he composed it.
And it still has that very Philip Glass sound to it as well.
Definitely.
Tell us about the different movements and putting it all together.
It's in three movements. The first movement is extremely, I would say, through composed. So there's really almost no repetition. It's in a way the most traditionally first movement-esque part of the piece. And the whole piece is very lush. But the first movement, there's almost something a bit French impressionist in the sound to me. The piano is, throughout the entire concerto, extremely integrated into the sound of the orchestra. The piano is being treated as a string instrument. And the most percussive it gets would be, I hear it sometimes sounding like an electric guitar, but still it's a string instrument. The second movement is the longest movement, and it's almost like a theme in variations, not quite, but it has that kind of feeling to it. And it goes through different types of character, but using a very similar kind of harmonic language, almost a kind of chaconne, not really, but that has that feeling of it developing over a line that you've heard before developing. And there are parts of it that are almost like rock music, I would say. And it could end there. But the third movement is really the most unusual movement. And I think he was the most concerned about the third movement, how it would be accepted. But it's extremely slow moving. And he dedicated it to Arvo Pärt. And you can hear that influence of the kind of drone that it has in it. It has this repeated drone in the left hand of the piano, which is sometimes picked up by the bass players. But this feeling of completely suspended time, and it grows and evolves. And by the end of the piece, you just really can't believe where you've been taken. It's a kind of piece where when it finishes, everybody just is suspended and they just need to wait a moment. I've done it as the end of a program several times, and it's a very moving end to a concert.
It's an incredible work, and when you were talking about the lush sound, there are parts of it that just sound like velvet to me, if velvet could have a sound.
Yeah.
You wrote that Glass's compositions were created during an age of reproduction, but still insist on repetition as a human musical value. What do you mean by that?
This is not a piece that can be sampled. You know, a lot of music today, a repetition is done by processing it and clicking something that will then make it repeat. The repetitions in Glass change. Even if the notes on the page remain the same, it changes because you're playing it at a different point in time and other music has occurred. And that affects how you play it. You can have intentions about how you want to change it. And sometimes you can have no intentions and it will just naturally change. To me, that's something, this idea of repetition, of us wanting to relook at things, at revisit things, of having routines, of finding patterns wherever we possibly can, is something you can observe from very young children. Through adults, we all hang on to that. We can't just be constantly changing. We need some things that we can have remaining the same. And yet nothing remains the same because we're always moving through time. And to me, his music really reflects that. It's a mistake to play his music as if it's an exact replication with no emotion. He puts so much emotion into playing his own music. I think there's so much emotion in that music and so much variety within the repetition.
So is there anything else you would like to talk about with the Circles Piano Concerto, or anything you'd like to say about being back in Iowa, or you have 2 years that you have this concerto all to yourself?
Actually, he's given me an extra year, so I have 3 years. Well, it's just wonderful to play here. I noticed in the rehearsal yesterday that I had with the orchestra that, first of all, Jason allowed me to speak directly to the orchestra, which is not always something that happens when you play with an orchestra. Sometimes it has to be done through a conductor. And then when I did speak to the orchestra, everybody was visibly listening and engaged and responsive and changed immediately because of suggestions that I made. That kind of communication with musicians is a treasure. And I think that you're really lucky to have an orchestra that feels that way about the music that they're playing.
It's a unique situation where you really have a direct link with the composer, and often with concertos, the composer may no longer be with us. You don't have that direct link, and you do have this link, which I think is really very, very special.
Yes, it has been very special to get to know him. I will say what I find particularly striking about him is that he really feels no ownership over his own music. I would say that the only thing that he feels very strongly about is following the structure of what he wrote. In other words, he would be very upset if you were to leave out repeats, because to him, all of those elements, those kinds of modules, create the structure, the architecture of the piece, and that's important to him. But beyond that, how you interpret it, the dynamics that you use, the phrasing, the tempo, the articulation, he hands that over to the performers. And I think part of that is because he himself is a performer, so he realizes how much is alive in the moment of performance by whoever's playing it. And part of it is this kind of quality that he has of almost not knowing his own music. That when he composes it, it seems like it's a kind of meditative state that he's in. And afterwards, he might not even recall how he came up with the idea that he did. And so he grants that ownership to the people that are playing it, because that's what makes the music come alive, is whoever's playing it.
Well, I'm sure this is going to be a brilliant performance, and I can hardly wait to hear it because I really love the recording of it.
It's
just wonderful recording, and I think this is going to be a terrific concert. And thank you for coming back to Iowa and putting the WCF Symphony on your list. Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, I just want to say thank you for having me back, and I'm really looking forward to the concert.